Get ready as Dave and Andrew experience a little cultural exchange.
They eat reconstituted shit. They get those little cards out, they right. stick them in a slot, and whatever you just flushed is now coming back to you as a pot roast.
How about a steaming plate full of gawk as we get to know the Klingons?
And instead of him like running to the bathroom after the scene and puking it all out,
right.
he's just delighted by shoving this stuff in his mouth.
So slip your transponder in your boot and get ready to come aboard right about
now. I got to tell you, lately, I've just been supercharged about TNG.
Oh.
Something about, I think we're getting into a good run of episodes, and that always gets me excited, but I've been very eager to talk about this episode.
We're getting into a rhythm, number one. It's the rhythm method, number one.
The rhythm is going to get you, number one.
The rhythm is going to get you. I believe you can sing like one, you can't sing the full verse, but I think you sing the first three lines of a verse without anybody suing you. But I don't think we have to worry about that anyways.
I don't think Ms. Estefan or Mr. Estefan, mm-hmm. for that matter, are poised by their podcasting machines waiting for an opportunity.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast. It's your favorite Star Trek The Next Generation Rewatch podcast.
Yay.
Well, I don't know what that was.
Yay.
Yay.
Jolly good show.
Yay. Igga, nice igga, one.
Good show.
Bitty, bitty, igga, bitty, igga, buck.
Aboard the Pog, this is our favorite podcast. I like to eat my gawk and listen to TNGs.
Oh, it's a gawk-centric episode. Anybody that needs to know what this is about, it's all about the gawk.
Pass me the Pippius claw.
Live, love, laugh, gawk.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, it's me, Commander Dave E. Dave, and my compatriot in the Star Trek nonsense,
Ambassador Andrew.
Ah,
I'm in charge of the Officer Exchange Program.
Oh. That is very episode specific. Thank you, because this episode we are mixing it up. Ship to ship is what they say. Ship to flipping ship.
Hey, can I ask you a little question Commander Dave E. Dave? Now, it's Commander Dave E. Dave, correct?
Yeah, that.
And it does the E stand for entertainment, like Chuck E. Cheese?
Chuck E. Cheese, thank you. Thank you for going back to deep episode, everybody. I'm an ex-employee of the great cheese himself.
Is anyone really an ex-employee? Aren't you always still an employee? Is there some sort of signaling device? You'll be reactivated and you'll have no choice but to climb into the ball pit and seek out children's feces.
Just when you think you're out, he'll pull you back in, Dave. Exactly. I never don't feel like I'll have to show up to work there some weekend. If anybody missed episode, whatever it was I said this on, this is how I used to answer the phone at Chuck E. Cheese. Hello, it's a good time for the great taste of Chuck E. Cheese. Dave speaking. How may I help you? We're working through season two, and so far it's been a little rocky this season. We had a one bright point. I'm going to say. Outside mm-hmm. of that, we've had some pretty clunky episodes still, and it's kind of like 1 foot is in season one still. But with this episode right here, I think we are hitting some TNG gold.
I would agree. We're getting into a stretch of some pretty good episodes, and looking ahead at season two, you know, granted there's still some clunkers, there's some real stinkers coming, but we start seeing a better quality episode, and this is definitely an example of that. I'm going to go on record, and I know for a lot of people this is going to be a shocking statement, but I'm going to go on record as saying that this is my favorite Will Riker episode. I don't care what anyone else thinks. You prefer Frame of Mind. I know Frame of Mind is your favorite.
I do love Frame of Mind as well, but after revisiting this one, I don't know. I'll have to tell you after we get to Frame of Mind, but this one is really good, and I agree with you. I mean, we saw Riker do some weird shit in season one, and he's kind of been, he hasn't been much of a presence in season two. I know we had...
Where Silence Has Lease.
Yeah, so that episode, we had some... Riker, and we've got Riker in every episode, of course, but this is like I think the first Riker-centric episode this season, and definitely the strongest so far.
He's got another episode in this season, which is kind of weird, where he meets his father, which is also kind of odd because it came up earlier when he's talking to the Klingon in this episode about parents.
Yeah.
So, like, best of both worlds, the first part of the Borg cliffhanger is often brought up as a strong Riker episode. There are other Riker episodes throughout that people, but this, to me, I wish we would have had this Riker for the entire series. And when we start getting deep into Riker, I will explain why.
How do you think the Riker of Hyde and Q compares to the Riker of Matter of Honor?
They're two different characters, right? They're just absolutely two different characters. And the Riker of Matter of Honor is so much more mature, so much more, you know, on point.
Mm.
This is an episode that plays to his strengths really strongly. And again, it creates a really promising multidimensional Riker that I don't think other episodes play off of too successfully. He's obviously moved past the part where he's just the victim, getting electrocuted every 5 minutes.
Zapped.
So thank God that's over.
Zapped by those electric powered guys in the drug addled episode, where poor Riker has to stand there. Poor Frakes has had to stand there a number of times while they animate electricity dancing around his body in season one, at least. And I wonder how this evolved. I mean, I wonder how it unfolded, because we talked a lot in season one about these dueling characters of Picard and Riker, and how Riker was supposed to be this Kirk and Picard was supposed to be this old captain, the wise old captain, and how because Patrick Stewart was much more dynamic, that starts shifting. And I think in this episode, you can see it really clearly, and they do it right, where these two characters are contemporaries, they are equals, and they say it a lot in the show, but they don't show it. And then I think in this episode, they show it, and you actually see Riker with a lot of value in this episode. And I think these are the episodes that I go back to when I'm watching the whole series and say, this plants some roots for Riker moving forward. You say, oh yeah, I remember. This is the same.
Riker roots.
Riker, yeah. Riker roots.
So when you're saying they're equals, you mean in terms of character development, right? I mean, you don't mean in terms of authority or their role.
Well, obviously.
You mean in terms of depth as characters.
Well, I mean, you know, we know this from episode one, Farpoint, Encounter at Farpoint, that Riker could have had his own command. Now, he couldn't have had a galaxy-class starship,
right,
but he could have been a captain. And I think, and you even have lines in this episode where Picard is acknowledging Riker as a fellow captain. I guess that's what I mean. We know that Picard has the final say, and that he's really, they can't Bill Clinton, Al Gore this thing, or it's
but I think
that's not gonna work.
It's a good analogy for old people, you know, this idea that they were operating as equals in a lot of ways, but at the end of the day, it was Big Bill who had he had more of the charisma,
right.
He had more of the ability to, he was clearly much more of a compelling leader at the end of the day than Al Gore.
Yeah. For our younger listeners, this would be like our Biden-Harris, okay? Or our okay. Obama-Biden, okay?
Allow me to... Celebrate this
I'm going to pop my beautiful Perrier, too. Ooh, we're going to have a good one tonight, number one. Once you're done, taking that sip, how about summarizing this episode?
As part of an officer exchange program, the Enterprise gets a new Benzite ensign. Menden is his name. It's Menden.
Menden?
And the Klingon ship, Lucky Devils, the Pah.
How do you spell that?
The Pah?
How do you spell that?
The Pag?
P-A.
P-A-G-H.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like Og with a P, so Pog.
Pog.
Pog. I have relatives who are Dutch, and they have a very phlegmy language, mostly because of the large cheese consumption. So there's a lot of for our listener in Groningen, you'll understand what I'm talking about. The Pach. They get Riker as their officer.
Who
exchange.
Gets Riker?
The Pach.
Oh.
Both of these officers kind of struggle to fit in with their new assignments. You know, Menden, eager to impress Picard, while Riker is eager to experience life among Starfleet's longtime frenemies. And wouldn't you know it, it's Mendon is one of those names, like you either say Mendon or you say Mendon.
Mendon the Benzite. Mendon. How about this? Do you remember that? I think it's like a itch cream. It's like, bye, Mendon. Remember that one? That's what I always thought when I saw this name.
That he was an itch cream. His failure to inform Picard of a microbe that's eating the Enterprise hull sparks conflict when the Klingons discover the same microbe eating their hull and jump to the conclusion that it's an attack by the Enterprise. Riker is unable to convince Klingon Captain Kargon, say that three times.
Kargon!
That the Enterprise... Kargon, take me away.
That's what I thought
that
too.
The Enterprise is blameless. Even when they receive a message from the Starfleet vessel offering help. Hey, Kargon, we're trying to help you out. He's prepared to destroy the Enterprise.
Right.
And Riker needs to think fast if he's going to avoid the coming battle. Hey, will Riker save the day? Will Kargon see reason? Will Mendon stop bogarting that pink smoke? Can Riker even get his legs over a Klingon chair? We'll find out in this exciting episode. I also want to point out to our to our listeners that the autocorrect here in the word processing program that I'm using corrected Klingon to Lingon, as in Lingonberry.
That's funny.
Like we're talking about pancakes.
That's funny. Everybody, if you haven't spent enough time with us, go ahead and do that at home. That happens to me all the time too. I don't know why Klingon of all the things has got to be in the autocorrect. I mean, and especially on our computers that have the AI where they're supposed to be adding the shit in. Let me tell you this. It's a little behind the scenes because I know you love this, Andrew. But the expression that I sometimes use, UTB, comes up in my autocorrect, but Klingon does not. I don't get it. What the hell, right?
Working.
Digga, digga, digga.
Working.
Working.
Digga, 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 digga.
You know what I like about what you did?
Carbon-based life form. What do you like?
I like how you synopsized the shit out of that thing. I think that pretty much tells us everything about this episode.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time.
But the thing is...
I'm going to go get some Lingonberry.
No, so we're going to do what we do, which is work our way through the episode. And this episode is good. So let's just start off at the top and make sure everybody gets that. It is excellent. And I think that if every episode of Next Gen was like this in these early seasons, I mean, we would have gone nuts for this show, like more nuts than we already are. I mean, I am actually thinking about this show every day of my life. So I don't know how much more invested I could be in this show, but
yeah, I think it's actually good that we didn't have that problem. You would probably be, you know, heavily medicated at the very least at this point.
Well, maybe these poor people that worked on the show for all these years would have won some Emmys or something because...
Oh, no, that'll never happen.
Because the thing is, people just hate sci-fi, no matter how good it is. And this is an episode, a really well-written episode, a well-acted episode. The construction of the episode was really well done. And there's not much to complain except for the stuff that kind of stands out as being... old-fashioned-y, and...
Oh, don't worry. We'll find things to complain about. You know why I was excited about this episode, may I say?
Okay.
I was excited because after decades, and I do mean decades, of dealing with Klingons, we're finally going to get a little, you know, what are the Klingons like at home? And we talked about this early on when we talked about the Ferengi and the Ferengi development and why the Ferengi don't work. Is that you can't imagine, or you can't easily imagine, a Ferengi society. How would it operate? Whereas the Romulans were carefully structured, based on Rome.
Right.
You could imagine their society. Klingons are kind of vexing because we're meant to understand there's Klingon poetry and Klingon opera and Klingon culture.
Yes.
But I don't know. What do they like at home? What do they like when they take their spiky boots off?
I think that's what we don't get in this episode is that, I mean, we do get an insight into this Klingon world, but when we see it and we see Riker go to the ship and there's many great scenes where he's interacting with Klingons, the world building, as they call it now, doesn't make sense. I mean, you have a bunch of characters who are these sort of rough, savage people who work by this code of violence and honor. And what I think is weird is that if you look at the original series, because you noted the Romulans, and they're from the original series, as well as the Klingons and the Vulcans, but not the Ferengi. you have these cultures that are, I don't think they're any more worked out, really. I just think the acting and the characterization is subtler. They're more like humans. They're less like
right.
space creatures. And I think that my complaint for 30-something episodes has been about this evolution of the Klingons and these face appliances and making aliens have to be so alien. And so Star Trek The Motion Picture started this Klingon evolution where original series Klingons had, they had pointy ears and some makeup, but they weren't these big face appliances, these big spiky right. suits right. and these really kind of, and of course the teeth appliances that.
What there's.
Yes.
There's some not so subtle stuff going on there. And I think it's okay to mention that their skin was a different color, right? It was a darker color, but they also had those kind of, you know, the kind of facial hair that would suggest, you know, that they're from different cultures.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I think that's right. And I think you mean darker skin than all the majority of the characters on the show at the time, which were all white people, except for Uhura and Sulu. I mean, there was definitely this dark-skinned Asian person look. It works in a way because they wanted to make these people seem like Russians. And I know there's part of Russia that has people that look very much like this without being like the quote-unquote white Russians that were, you know, used to from the 60s and the Cold War era. But they wanted to make them look like non-white people, which we get it. It's and what happens is in the motion picture that came out in 1980, I think, or 1979, they wanted to make them scarier and they wanted to get away from this comparison to Russians. And so they made the Klingon somehow evolve into these more monstrous things. The show is stuck with that. And so we have Klingons now that are not the original series Klingons, but they're these kind of monstrous Klingons.
Their otherness is presented in a much more, you know, overt, monstrous way, right? So they're given those ridges, they're given those fangs. The original series Klingons weren't like that,
right?
They, you know, we didn't see them as these hulking monster beasts, but you had actors like, you know, we've seen Michael Pataki earlier. You also had Michael Ansara, who was married to Barbara Eden for years, and they're heavily made up. They're given this dark green face paint. And their hair is all kind of ruffled and savage. They have these big bushy eyebrows. And at the very least, goatees, if not straight out what we would call Fu Manchu mustaches.
Right.
And that holds over, right? Only now they're added with these ridges. All this time, we have not been presented any glimpse of what it's like to be a Klingon.
All right.
And part of the implication was they weren't that really much different from us,
right.
except they had different, different side of the political argument. They wanted their empire. We had our empire. They wanted their empire.
Right.
And they were kind of swarthy looking, Eastern looking, and more inclined, according to what we heard from Kirk and company, to be aggressive
right.
and, you know, violent.
That was carried through in the Star Trek original series movies, you know, starting with the motion picture, and then in 3, 4, 5, whatever.
So what do we learn about the Klingons in this episode?
What do we learn is that what's funny, the reason I'm bringing up these original movies is because this is like 70 plus years later, and these Klingons are dressed the same and fly around in the exact same ships that they flew around in Star Trek III, The Voyage Home, or you know, Star Trek V or whatever. And
Star Trek III, Search for Spock.
Oh, God damn it. Star Trek III, Search for goddamn Spock. So that one.
Search for Spock.
We learn through a Riker's lens that it's not a very complicated culture on the ship, and these are some tough characters.
Right. And I was stunned because I figured they must have like really good night vision because that ship is dark as hell. I don't understand why they haven't invented LED bulbs or anything. They
I know.
Need some garage lights.
I know it's weird because you're right. The sets are super dark. They're really complicated looking sets. There's a lot of junk around and they look like those movie sets. And I like that. It's definitely more cinematic to look inside. There's more control over the light. It really stands out when they cut from the Klingon ship back to the Enterprise, and you see the Enterprise is so well lit, and it's like hyper lit, and it's so pastel, and so kind of what they're thinking in the late 80s is perfect color wise and everything. And then when you go back to the Klingon ship,
I gotta ask you a question.
Yeah, really dark. Yeah,
Ask you a question. Do you think they have carpeting?
I don't know.
You think the Klingon homeworld and so on, they have carpeting? Because they wear those furry vests. Yeah. They wear those Sonny Bono vests, which implies they understand at least the texture of carpeting. But there's no carpeting at all in that Klingon ship that we
That's
see.
An interesting question. I don't know. Do we ever see the floor in there? I don't think we do. If we do, it's not lit. So it's pretty dark. And I know there's a shot of the Enterprise where we see carpet. There's a long shot of this hall, and we see Picard walking down. And there's a lot of carpet in there.
Wait. I want to be clear here. Are you supposing that since we didn't see it, it is possible that they have like a shag?
Oh, yeah.
On the Klingon ship?
Listen, I think it's like the shag that my parents had, this really dark green shag carpet in the 70s. That was the best carpet, that stuff that everything would get lost in that thing. I don't. There's no reason to vacuum that kind of carpet. But that's totally what the Klingons have going on there.
No, I think it's much more reasonable to think that they have like a Berber. If they have any carpeting
okay,
at all,
all
it's
right.
a Berber.
Yeah, the
okay, I mean, it's not going to be shaggy. That's not how they
roll. Pog bones, when they drop off of their plates, don't get caught up in that shag carpet. You got to have something that's easy to pick it out of.
Well, they have those little blades on their boots. Mm. Maybe that's to cut through the
right.
shag. But even if, it would get caught in the shag. Those blades would get caught in the shag. I just don't think that's how that works.
We've got this exchange going on. Riker goes over, and I want to note something before the exchange, because there's a scene that I really like in this episode. And I'll tell you why. We've got this scene where Riker and Picard are talking out this exchange program before the credit roll at the beginning. and I think they're in the holodeck. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No. They're in the phaser shooting range.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
We're told pretty straightforward that there is a there. Heaven forfend, they would just create a holodeck
but that's
for this.
What.
They actually have a room somewhere.
Riker, meet me down on phaser range 5. Don't get confused like last time.
This is the end result of laser tag, right? Is they stand there in their little circle, their little bicolored circle, because I guess only two people could do it, and they shoot at dots with phasers.
And these beams come at them, and it looks like they're in this ring, but it looks like they're in the holodeck, right? But they're like, to left, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, Riker, 11 o'clock. And what I love, though, is that this is what I've been talking about for so many episodes. Finally, these people write a scene where they play exposition against action. And I understand that it's not a very active sequence. They're standing in a circle, but they're shooting lasers, and you're excited about the laser shooting, okay? This is my whole thing about shooting more laser guns, okay? They're shooting the laser guns, and they're talking about some boring shit that's going to happen in the episode, which is, like, think about how boring this is. It doesn't end up being boring, but the idea that, hey, number one, we've got an exchange program. What do you think? And then Riker's like, hey, I might, you know the lines. But
it's like, yeah, dude, that sounds cool. That sounds like I could get my mellow on over there.
But they're doing it while they're jumping around and shooting at these, they're shooting stuff, and it's like, yes.
But what the fuck is Picard? What's Picard doing with his hand? He's got his hand up that whole time like he's surfing, right? And he's shooting with his stupid hand up. He never, to my knowledge, never shoots like that again.
I'm gauging.
But usually when they shoot those phasers, they stand straight and they extend their arm to full length. Like maybe they're like radar detectors or something, and they're microwaves or something. They're afraid to become sterile. And they shoot that stupid thing. At no point will Picard hover his little hand like that again.
That's the thing. That really shows what's going on in the show, because Picard never runs around and shoots that gun like you want, or like at least I want him to, right? He doesn't shoot it like that. He shoots it like, it's like, pat, 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 Mr. Stewart, stand as still as possible so we can animate this in. If you move it around too much, it's screwed.
That's why they shoot it like that. They make them stand as still as possible, and it's not because it's harder to shoot it when it's in motion. But this scene, it's got some great laser shots. Like one shot, one of the actual laser shots goes right above the camera. It goes above us, and it's like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you for doing that. And why I'm saying thank you is because this dialogue that gets out, and it's done through action, and it's just, it, you know, remember old Aaron Sorkin? They had an expression for Aaron Sorkin that they made up for the West Wing, and it was called talking and walking. And Aaron Sorkin shows.
Yes.
And some, I love some Aaron Sorkin shows like Sports Night and The Newsroom, but other ones like The West Wing. I wasn't a huge West Wing fan. I just couldn't get into it. There's too much of this. But what I liked that he always did was all the talking and walking. And they get out this expository dialogue by having scenery go by. It's so much more interesting if people are talking and walking past stuff. And they're active. You're literally active when you're walking. You're doing something. You're not just standing there. And so that's what I so appreciated this part of the opening. And I know I'm obsessing about this little thing, but it's only because in an episode that has so much more to say, but I appreciated it.
You think
they
have one over on the POG? The POG? Like a little shooting range, a little laser tag range.
Yeah,
on the
they've
paw.
Got it's like when you remember those old Greyhound races. There's like a targ, and it's there's like a there's a targ, and it's on.
It just goes around,
runs around in the room, and they shoot at it.
It's like duck hunt with a targ. Right.
No,
listen, I have another question. I want to say something else about the POG. I want to say something about their bridge.
On the Klingon vessel.
Yes, on the Klingon vessel, because we were talking about the design of the Klingon vessel, and we got off it before I got to this thing, which was, what the hell are those giant shock absorbers around the captain's chair? I've complained about that wooden bar that's behind where Picard and Troy and Riker sit. And how they got to leap over that?
Yeah, it's his ballet bar. Yeah,
but that's 20 times better than those giant shock absorbers. What are
those
for?
It's funny. I looked at those and I kept thinking, man, I swear I've seen those things. We got to look for them. They're so big. I know I've seen them in some other episode. They're just like there's some other thing that's around there at Paramount. And they're like, hey, put these big bars in here. It's not crowded enough.
Yeah, so they're like dressing the set, and they're like, hey, Melvin, you remember those giant shock absorbers? Bring those in. Those will look good, Melvin.
Yeah, fill up some space. They really were taking up space, and they made the ship look, you know, even kind of clunkier than it already was. I didn't mind them. I just got distracted thinking, I know I've seen them before, and they gotta be around here somewhere.
But that ship is so, it's so small, you know, and you feel, to me, it feels more like a spaceship would feel. Maybe not in the 23rd century, because it feels crowded. It feels like really kind of flying by the seat of your pants, like modern spacecraft. You know, I mean, modern in our time, when you're just like kind of strapped to a chair on top of a giant missile and shot into space. Yeah, I couldn't get past the giant shock absorbers.
I like that. I do like that they're trying to make the ship more compact. And they, if you remember from Star Trek III, the search for Spock.
The search.
Oh, right.
For Spock.
Remember Christopher Lloyd. And his pet dog. He on his ship, he had like, maybe that was like an evolved targ. I don't know. But he had like this puppet dog next to him in his big command chair that he would pet. And I think it gets killed eventually. But he had a very compact bridge as well that this bridge is modeled after, I believe.
All right.
So Riker gets to the Klingon vessel and assumes second in command. And notes a lot of differences between the Klingon vessel and the Enterprise.
I got to tell you what struck me about this episode is I thought it was really smart about how it dealt with, you know, sort of entering into another culture. Because the one thing that they focus on, which makes a lot of sense to me, is the food.
Mm.
And if you've ever dealt with folks from other cultures or a lot of different cultures, that's really one of the ways that, you know, you come into that culture. So I have several friends who are from the Philippines. I love them very dearly. They're very close to me. And I have eaten a lot of Filipino food that I wouldn't have eaten otherwise. I should let you all know that, you know, my parentage is half Indonesian. So I have eaten some Indonesian food, and I've shared Indonesian food with them. And we kind of have that there's kind of a quasi-cultural overlay there that we could talk about. We could talk about the differences in the food. It makes perfect sense to me that Riker would go after this first by going through the food. And I thought that was fantastic. But this also raises one of the issues, because I was really uncomfortable when Picard and Pulaski were finding the food so, like, unusual and off-putting. It's like, come on, you, Picard, honestly, let's forget Pulaski for a minute. We're used to Pulaski being offended by everything.
Right.
And anything she doesn't understand, she just kind of gives it a side eye. But Picard, you're telling me you haven't seen anything like Klingon food before. Am I supposed to believe this?
So that scene plays out on the Enterprise in mess hall, or I don't know where that was supposed to be, but there was some place that
it was like 10 forward,
some place that now has waiters, which they did not have before. But so there, you need a waiter to bring all this stuff to Riker, and so Riker's got this assortment of dishes that are supposed to upset us or make us squirm or whatever, and they're full of like tentacles and chicken's feet and stuff that our Western eyes are supposed to feel is really weird. I did note that Picard, that Patrick Stewart and Mulder were playing that scene in a weird way. Like they were uncomfortable, but they didn't overdo it like we've seen people do, especially with Worf's character. It was like they were kind of put off by it. Nobody said anything overtly offensive, but they clearly were uncomfortable. And we as the audience, though, were also supposed to be completely uncomfortable by this display. And if you eat non-American food, there's all kinds of stuff in food that's interesting and some of it is the stuff that was actually on these plates.
Because I believe for the Pipius Claw, they actually used chicken feet.
Yeah, they did.
And if you've never had chicken feet or duck feet, you know, you're missing out. I mean, that's good eating.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm missing out so far. What I love, though,
You've eaten worse, I'm sure.
The lots of cheese. The thing that I really like, though, is the way that how Jonathan Frakes played that scene where he is totally into this. And instead of him like running to the bathroom after the scene and puking it all out, he is just delighted by shoving this stuff in his mouth. And what I, again, the organicness of a scene where you're actually eating food. You just don't see people actually consuming food, almost never on TV, and a little bit more in the movies, but you almost never see it. And usually because the reaction of people is like, yuck, people don't want to see people eating. But that it was totally appropriate. He was scarfing that food down, and it was such a revelation. A couple episodes ago, there was a scene where Riker actually strokes his goatee, and the idea that he's actually touching his face, that you have like this kind of organic contact going on, and he's doing a thing that we do in our world. We really eat food, and we actually saw him consuming it and enjoying it. And I think that he played that really well. It was nicely done, and it comes in later on because there's a scene on the Klingon ship where he has to deal with eating Klingon food, and the Klingons on board think that he won't eat this stuff.
He says, there's no way he's going to eat this, especially live, Gok, you know, where it's basically worms that are moving around. Right. There's no way he's going to eat that. You go back to Conspiracy where we were supposed to be grossed out by those maggots they were eating.
Right. That's right.
And I will admit that I was a little grossed out by that, but I've eaten stuff that looks like Gok.
Right.
I mean, I honest to God, it's not that weird to me. And the Pipius Claw wasn't that weird to me. And I'm like, you know, I'm good with this. And I like that he was too.
Right.
And I felt that Picard, especially being prissy about it and being like, I wouldn't eat this, number one. I mean, come on, are you going to sit there and drink your Earl Grey? I mean, Earl Grey's gross. You ever drink that stuff? That's disgusting. I'm not drinking that.
Knock it off. I like that. But what is he eating?
Yeah, you're right.
These people are going all over the galaxy, and you think that this would be like, imagine the Food Network in 2024, whatever this is supposed to be. Like what, 2024? Wait, what is this supposed to be?
The 23rd century.
I mean, imagine what is on these channels. I mean, these talk about a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Imagine what Bobby Flay Jr. is doing in outer space here on his cooking show. I mean, can you imagine you like show up to a planet and there's like this new cuisine on every planet? You would think these people would be way heavier than they are on the Enterprise, or having a lot more, you know, diarrhea or something every episode because they're trying all this new food all the time.
They eat reconstituted shit.
Right.
They get those little cards out. They right. stick them in a slot, and whatever you just flushed is now coming back to you as a pot roast. You got a problem with a Pippius claw, buddy? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on now.
I've worked at some big places, and you stand in line at the cafeteria, and you see what's on display. And it'd be funny if there's just like an aisle of cards, you know, and they're all like, there's all these like brown and there's all these different brown colored cards for the Klingon food. And there's all these red and yeah. yellow and blue ones for all the Starfleet sanctioned food, you know, so you can stay away yeah. from.
Well, doesn't that orange one look delicious?
It's my favorite.
No, it looks like an orange card.
O'Brien. Hand me the flank steak.
So they try to show these with the Klingons alike because they eat gross food. So yeah. sorry, it doesn't work. Okay. And then they have really kind of an interesting conversation. I mean, there's that thing with the females. They want to test him out, you know. And that made me laugh, too, because I'm thinking, this is Riker, people. If you're supposed to be making Riker feel awkward because women are coming on to him, give me a break. We have seen nothing but episode after episode, and we will see episodes coming where he just can't wait.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's down for the ladies. When he says that thing about one or both, I'm just like, yeah, that's Tuesday for Riker.
There's a lot in that scene because there's a great line that I think it's Clax, right? Says,
oh, what the heck's his name?
Isn't it Clax?
Clag.
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 It's Clag.
It's when he brings him the live gawk, right?
Right.
You know, he's kind of taunting Riker, and then he says, you know, if you don't want live gawk, maybe we could have one of the female Klingons breastfeed you. Which
yeah, breastfeed you, breastfeed you. And I was thinking, Riker's like, hey, you know, I don't see why it has to be one or the other. I don't see why this has to be an either or proposition. If you know what I'm saying here, Claggy
right.
baby.
And I mean, the thing is, it's a funny line, I think, and
oh,
then
yeah.
it's funny the yeah. response to it because Riker is like a gamer, and we've seen Riker already in season one hook up. At least he hooked up with the planet Haven's.
Angel One. The Angelus Strait, or whatever
her
name was.
Yeah, the magistrate of Angel One, the president of Angel One, he hooked up with her, and that was his own exchange program in that episode. And things were exchanged, and I fully thought we were going there in this episode. I forgot where it went, but then I also remembered the weird humor around sex with Worf that we've seen a couple times in season one, where
yes.
Worf has talked about how human or at least non-Klingon women can't take a Klingon lovemaker because it's too violent. And they were turning it with the female Klingons on the ship and trying to use the same humor, which, you know, comes off a little bit better here, but it's the same weird joke.
Yeah, but it doesn't work because you're saying it to Riker.
Right, right.
He looks at Clag and says, is she serious? And I get it that we're supposed to read it like, uh-oh, he's worried. But I'm like, no, come on, that's not my Riker.
No.
He's looking at Clag going, I hope she's serious, because I know I am.
This is the new Riker. I mean, this is not the Riker that's looking at those little women playing instruments in his quarters, or the one that summons up Marinette?
Minuet.
Minuet! Minuet! In the holodeck.
I also want to point out, since we mentioned Clag, that Clag is played by famed guest actor Brian Thompson.
Right.
And I know you're familiar with Brian Thompson. He was in X-Files as the alien bounty hunter. He was one of the villains in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Basically, if it's been on TV, he's been in it. He's a Klingon like two or three times in two or three
right.
different episodes.
In the movie
he's
too,
in Generations.
I think.
Yeah, he's a big hulking dude. He's just like a big, thuggy guy.
It's funny because even with all that Klingon makeup on, I recognized him right away. I was like, oh, hey, that's the guy from the X-Files, man.
Yeah, that's why they brought him on, because it doesn't cost that much.
Right, right. He's good.
It's like, you know, Dorne's like, how come I have to be in this chair for 5 hours? And Brian Thompson's like, just drive through.
Right.
Give me a couple of spritz and a forehead.
But look, he's good in this episode. I mean, he's perfectly cast.
Oh, no, he's great.
He's the one that Riker kind of, you know, that sympathizes with Riker, and he's the one character on the Klingon vessel that actually is, I don't know if you'd say sympathetic, but he's the one that's like available to exchange information with. The captain is this kind of cold-hearted, unmoving figure who we've seen before. And this guy, even though he's as tough as shit in the beginning, this second or third in command, whatever he's supposed to be, is Clag is under Riker. And so not like that. And in their first scene together, Clag, you know, confronts Riker, and Riker actually has to beat him down, which is, you know, like, goddamn.
That's a great
Klingon
scene.
Fisticuffs. And it's great because you're like, oh, it's like, wow, this Riker can beat up a Klingon, first of all, because I don't think Riker can beat up Worf. I mean, back on our own ship, but he does it here, and it, you can believe it. It works. The drama works well. It's written right.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? You keep saying that. I have we ever seen Worf go full at it and take anyone down yet? Or is this all just been he's been getting his wrinkly head handed to him? I'm still waiting for him to take someone down.
Well, again, in hiding queue, he threw those
vicious animal things.
Yeah, the VATs around, and he's thrown some Ferengis around too, I think.
We have yet to see him best an opponent.
You don't think he's beat anyone down?
No. No.
I mean, the thing about this episode that I think is still awkward is what's going on with Worf. And when you juxtapose the otherness that Worf is experiencing on the Enterprise, because we've been watching a show that's about a person who's out of his element, a person that's out of his culture, being on the Enterprise, being on a Federation ship, even though he's part of the Federation, he clings to his Klingon heritage. Like nobody's
he's clinging on,
like nobody's business, right? So, and fine, be a proud Klingon, and that's all good. But the show itself is always pointing out how he's not, how he's unlike the rest of the Federation, but not unlike it in a positive way. It's often that he's saying something that's wrong, or that he's doing something that's inappropriate because he's a Klingon.
But the shocking thing to me in this one. I mean, granted, in Heart of Glory, when he was with the three Klingons back in season one,
right.
we understand that he is sort of an outsider to Klingon culture. We get that. He was raised by humans.
Right.
But then it gets worse in this episode because we see more Klingons among Klingons and not among the Federation. But then Worf also says to Riker that he studied them. I've studied Klingon culture. So he's coming to it through books. Right. Not books, pads, wherever the hell he's devouring this information. But it seems so weird and so distant. And it's like, wait a minute, this guy has been the example of what a Klingon is for us. And now we're finding out he's not really representing the mainstream Klingon culture.
Yeah, we do learn that. And there's more to that. But let me just note this thing, because I think it's important to touch on every time we hit it. What they're saying about Worf also is that, despite the fact that he didn't grow up on a Klingon planet and that he isn't part of like the knowledge base of Klingon, that he still has something inherently, there's something inherent about being a Klingon that Worf has that makes him different from being a human being. And these things oftentimes manifest as being, you know, more dangerous, being more angry, being more apt to
temper issues.
Yeah. And so it's like, are you saying that, you know, this there's something that's genetically Klingon that can't be un-Klingoned out of him, that is just a Klingon. And I think that part of it is a little disturbing. And I think it's also, it's disturbing now. I think it's an old fashioned 1980 something idea that people that were writing the show were blind to when they were writing about race, because it's about race. Also, because we've got this guy who's African American playing the Klingon.
Well, and they've missed a lot of. You also see how they've missed a lot of opportunities here. Like, we never see him eat like a Klingon. I can't remember if we ever see him eat.
No, of course.
But we've
not.
Never seen him eat like a Klingon, and he should eat, at least have like a cup of gawk with him. You know, like up on the bridge, he could just be eating some Pippia's claw while he's at his duty station, you know, having just like some worm hanging out his mouth or something. I don't see why that can't happen.
Data's sitting there watching him, enjoying every minute of it. Like, he's never seen a Klingon. Yeah. I've never seen a Klingon eat gawk before. But the eating part does speak to something else that I wanted to get to, too, about Riker and his experience on the Klingon ship. And this is, this is this kind of the perspective of this white dude on the Enterprise. He is a commander. I get it. Okay. So he's in charge. He has more authority than Worf does, but he can sit there in 10 forward and scarfing this stuff down without any sign of embarrassment. He's not a Klingon, so he can eat it any way he wants to, right? He's not ashamed of it. He right. kind of saunters through the Klingon vessel, and I love the way he does it, so don't get me wrong. But the perspective is he is a white dude with privilege on this ship. Only a privileged person, white guy, or you know, from the show's perspective, or some guy in Starfleet would roll this in these scenes like this, like coming on and assuming that he could take command, do everything a Klingon could do, not feel embarrassed, not feel concerned. And I know it's Riker as a character, and I get it. It totally works. But when you think about that, when you compare it to Worf's experience on the Enterprise, it's a little awkward. You know, we have an opportunity to watch a person that's out of his culture every week in Worf and to learn something about that. And what they choose to do with Worf is to make fun of him. And what they could be doing the whole time is saying, isn't it interesting that there's an alien on this ship? And what does he bring to the ship that's interesting about it, instead of making him kind of a goof?
And can't he just be closer to a genuine alien experience?
Right.
But, you know, I mean, Star Trek has this history. And again, going back to Spock, which I know we've talked about a lot in these last few episodes, but, you know, Spock is the biggest example, and he's always sort of challenged because of his beliefs. Mm. He constantly goes on about, you know, I'm Vulcan, so I do this. Right. I'm Vulcan, so I do that. And Worf does too. But again, Spock is also kind of mediated. He's half human, half Vulcan. He doesn't belong in either culture. But at least he was raised in Vulcan culture and has Vulcan cultural practices.
Right.
I don't know. I got to have to really think about this. And I invite the listeners to think about it, because there's a lot to work out here.
There is.
It's very odd.
There is, and I think we have the rest of the series to work this out too. And Worf definitely evolves. And I'm not saying that the Worf that ends up in, you know, Deep Space Nine, and then, you know, not much in the movies, but in Deep Space Nine, isn't the same Worf that we see here. And we get a much more complicated character by the end
Correct.
Of the Worf. And so it's not fair to put all that on this. It has more to do with the era that this was being made in. The lens of perfectionism the show thinks it's using on race and culture, and how, you know, how they think they know what they're talking about when you see it out of date, it's just off.
So Worf is always kind of pent up, right? Mm-hmm. Worf is not, he's very duty oriented. Clagg will say that, right? Clagg will say a Klingon is his work, not his family.
Right.
Which made me feel like, oh my God, what a bunch of type A corporate assholes these guys right. are. But, you know, hey, a Klingon is his work, not his family. Listen, I'm gonna be home late, Garga.
Right.
You know, put the kids to bed, because I got to go kill a bunch of
right.
Romulans.
Honey, some of my work is going to be assassinating the captain later tonight. Stay tuned.
You think it's like those Ken Burns letters from Civil War? You know, and he's like, "Dear Garga, today the captain showed weakness. I will have to slaughter him."
He was leaning over in the mess hall, picking up his live gawk, and I stabbed him right in the lower Klingon kidney.
There needs to be like some harmonica music, like some.
I know, that's what I was thinking too.
Dear Garga.
So, but this other thing that this unnamed Klingon says is that, you know, we're not in touch with our feelings.
Right.
And then suddenly I'm like, whoa. Here's like a Sopranos moment, right? There are a bunch of angry guys at work getting involved in nothing but violence, and they can't get in touch with their feelings. I really wish at that point Clagg would have blacked out, like in the beginning of the Sopranos, where Tony's having panic attacks. It would have been great if Clagg just like sort of and fell over. And the next scene, he would like have to go to counseling.
Quick, get the ship counselor. The what?
You think? Yeah. Who's the Deanna Troi?
Yeah.
Of the Pog.
You know who it would be. They picked him up on a side mission.
Who?
Hey, it's me, Counselor Armus.
Armus. Okay. All right. So Armus is the counselor.
Yeah.
Because he's learned to get in touch with his feelings.
I have.
So now the Klingons, like,
I've done a lot of work on myself. I've gone back to college.
Adult school.
Right.
Correspondence, because you're stuck on that planet, Armus.
I've got a fucking certificate. Sit down, Clagg. What's his name?
Clagg.
Oh, sit down, Clagg.
Clagg.
Let's talk.
Yeah. My father will die without honor.
First, Clag, let me acknowledge that it took a lot of courage for you to come here and sit down and talk to me. Listen. I've done a lot of work since episode one. Do you remember, Clag? That's when I subsumed Commander Riker. I flipping ate him. Maybe getting a little taste of number one did me some good on the inside.
Oh. That just goes a place.
Have you ever...
That goes a place. So you want Clag to get a taste of number one? Is that what you're trying to say?
Clag, unless you can subsume him, unless you can envelope him in your dark blackness, no! I'm just saying I'm a completely different entity. Now, Clag, tell me about your mother. And remember, Clag, I'm on a 50-minute hour.
Oh, I don't even know about my mother.
I wasn't breastfed. I was fed Corgula, Klingon formula, Targ milk.
That's the one. It's the worst.
That's fucking awful. Yeah, no one's ever going to make a show out of that. Thank God for that.
No, that's the episode we have to see. Armus is the entity that killed Yar.
Episode 21. Yeah. Skin.
Oh, that's right.
Of evil.
I'm no longer evil now.
So can we talk a little bit about this officer exchange program?
Oh my God, please. Yes.
Because it kind of freaked me out a little bit. It really bothered me a little.
If we didn't make it clear, this happens at the beginning of the show, before the Space of Final Frontier business.
The Benzite beams aboard.
Benzite shows up in the opening, and you, Andrew, can you please describe the Benzite
Menden
sequence? Because I know that you love, I know you have this place in your heart for these Benzites, and it's a weird scene, and it kind of...
Well, they look like catfish.
Right.
The last time we saw a Benzite was we saw Mordok in Coming of Age, where Wesley had to go and take the Starfleet
right
test, and they're good friends. And at the time, we talked about how much we liked it because he was an unusual-looking character. He has kind of a catfish thing coming off
right
his face.
Right, jowly.
He's got like a weird extra-long pinkies for no reason.
Oh, I forgot
and
about the pinkies.
He's got to inhale this pink smoke all the time. This is the exact same guy in the exact same outfit, only he's playing a different character. This time, instead of being Mordok, he's Menden.
Right. It's so weird.
Wes has that kind of unfortunate moment where he's like, hey, Mordok. And he goes, I ain't no Mordok. And he goes, oh, you look like him. All you Benzites look alike. That's what he says.
I know.
All you Benzites look alike.
There's no way.
I mean, come on, Wes.
There's no way that is still going on in the future, that kind of nonsense. And I know this show's making a point. They're making a comment, and they're trying to say something, but I don't know what it is, because it's Wes is made to look stupid. I mean, he's dumb for not knowing it, and it's confusing for poor Will Wheaton, because Will Wheaton is, the dude is the same guy, dressed up with the same costume, and Will Wheaton shows up on the set, and he's like, hey, Mordok, it's you again, and they're like, no, Will, come on, God, don't be ridiculous, this is a totally different Benzite. But listen,
and I could see where they're doing it as kind of a nod, like, isn't this funny? But
it's
when
not,
he says that, it says all the Benzites look alike,
right,
it's like, you're all, oh, damn, aren't you supposed to be, like, super smart? Isn't this the whole point to you, is that you're really smart? Because I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, your IQ and your EQ.
You're not playing enough.
All right. You got to think about the EQ there, Wes.
Wesley, you need to play more senses. You're really dropping off on your game.
I...
You know, the first part of being sensitive,
yes,
is using your internal sensors.
It is also, outside of that inappropriateness, it's also weird to, again, bring back a character who was actually interesting outside of the way he looked. He was an interesting character. He had an exchange with... In this episode, stuff too full of stuff. You didn't need the Benzite in this episode anyways. But so I get why they didn't want to make him be the same guy and then have Will Wheaton have a connection with him. That's its own episode. But it's a weird choice. And one of the things I was thinking, though, in the exchange program, and I want to, and I've been waiting a long time to share this with you, Andrew, is I thought it would have been great if they had somebody from like some kind of a four-legged creature planet comes in, he goes,
hey, what's happening?
Like Scooby.
Yeah.
Scooby.
Hey.
Oh.
Like Scoob, we're on the Enterprise, man. Raggy, we rated Rolly's Repisodes. Look, I waited a long time to use this voice, and for some reason, I got inspired today. Like, wouldn't it have been funny if Scooby-Doo showed up on the show? And the reason why I thought about Scooby-Doo on this show is because I think Worf is like the Scooby-Doo of the Enterprise. On Scooby-Doo, Scooby's always doing something stupid, and every once in a while, he'll do something. He'll save the day, you know, by accident. But they're always Scoob and...
Razor's a run!
Like Scoob! Watch out with that thing!
It's on real, Raggy! Watch out!
And the Picard, he introduces him to Picard, and Picard, you know, shakes his hand, of course, like a dog would. And then he's like, listen. Deanna's not in this episode because she's cleaning up Deck 22. Those goddamn golden retrievers. All dogs go to Deck 22!
Okay. Whatever you say, Raptin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed TNG's Not Another Star. I think I'm ready to retire now. We made it this far, but I'm done. I've gotten everything I need to get out of this podcast.
Wait, we're done with this one?
No, I'm done with this podcast. You've ended the whole show for me. I don't see any reason to go on.
Oh, you're saying once I've gone Scooby, that's it?
We can't go back. Can't go back.
Like Scoob! Come on, man, we're leaving!
I just wanted to talk about this stupid exchange program.
I'm in a exchange program!
But Scoob, don't you see how the exchange program is kind of weird? Because, like, the Federation is made up of all these different planets, but is Starfleet just like a human thing?
Rah.
I don't get it, Scoob.
Which one motion it?
Shaggy, maybe you could explain this to Scoob.
Like Scoob, man!
So...
Isn't it kind of a human-centric?
Rare.
You have some aliens on there, like Vulcans.
Right.
And then on other other shows, you have different alien species.
Yeah, the Vulcan doctor, right?
Yeah. Lieutenant Salar and Schizoid Man. So you have these other alien species, but now they have an exchange program, and Mendon is an ensign in Starfleet, but it's an exchange? That made no sense to me, Scooby.
Rare. Right, where you're rowing.
I don't know why the whole episode just couldn't be an exchange between the Enterprise and the Klingon vessel. I could have used more of those scenes with Jonathan Frakes on that Klingon ship. I mean, I couldn't get enough of that. Every single scene where he was on that Klingon vessel was good. The show often has these dual narratives going on where they feel like there's not enough happening, and you have to have something going on in the Enterprise, something going on in the Klingon vessel at the same time because you want to see your captain, you want to see the other crew. And I guess if it was all Riker, it would have just been Riker-centric. But as the episode evolves, Riker's put in this position where he has to decide, or they make it seem like he has to decide whether he's going to side with the Klingon captain, who he's second in command to, and he's supposed to be a good Klingon. And there's conflicting...
some tension. Actually some tension in this episode, because you know, obviously, that the Enterprise is not going to get blown up. You know that Riker's not going to die, but you don't know how he's going to figure this out.
Right.
He's got to thread this particular needle, and you know it's going to be foregrounded by this whole... Like, there's something's going to be wrong with the captain, and I got to take over for the captain on the Klingon ship. Because they say it at the very beginning, they bring it up a couple more times. It's like, hey, Riker's going to take over.
Right.
But you don't know how that's going to happen and how that's going to work out and how that's going to save things. I mean, it's bad to me, and one part we didn't really talk about when we were talking earlier, is that the Klingon ship apparently gives the Enterprise some space cooties. And I didn't care for
is
that.
Is it from, the Klingon ship?
I thought it was from the Klingon ship.
I thought it was something they both ran into, but maybe that makes more sense. You go with that. It sounds better that way. It's probably right.
Oh, okay. And the Klingon captain's not smart enough to realize that the Enterprise really wants to help.
Right.
You know, the Klingon captain has anger problems because he's not in touch with his feelings, because he hasn't spent time with Armus. And there's some really genuine tension there.
Yeah. Between Riker and the captain.
Well, how is Riker going to get out of this? How is he going to come up with a solution that's not going to lead to war?
Right, and it's really smart because the captain of the Klingon vessel, they're cloaked and they're going to attack the Enterprise because they think the Enterprise is somehow poisoning their vessel and putting this shit on it. And he's testing Riker to see if Riker is going to turn on him. And Riker says straight out, I'm going to act like a second in command. I'm not going to do anything that is going to stop you from attacking the Enterprise. But I will also not give you any secrets that will help you attack the Enterprise. And then Riker's solution,
right?
You know, and I'm sure you saw this coming from a mile away, but I didn't, because as I've said in past episodes, I really got wrapped up in the story, and I was watching it going, well, how is Riker going to get out of this, and how does he get out of it?
Once it happens, it's easier to kind of put the pieces together. Oh, the transponder. That's clever.
Right.
Oh, this. Oh, that. You know, the matter of him having to replace the captain if the captain's acting inappropriately or captain's disabled in some way. Okay, fine.
But
it's all laid out. But how those pieces are finally going to fit together is unknown. And I really enjoyed the way it worked out.
I did too. And the thing, so what happened early episode is that Worf gives Riker this.
It's an emergency transponder. Yeah.
Right. So it'll give the location of where Riker is, right? And of course, this is important if you're on a vessel that can cloak, which the Klingon vessel can do, and the Enterprise still can't, even though this is like 70 years later. So when they're in this tense moment and the Klingon vessel is sneaking up on the Enterprise, Riker kind of talks this device into the hand of the Klingon captain. And even at that point, I was like, what's he doing? Like he hands over the device like, oh, here's my tech that I've been hiding the whole time. And it actually allows them to lock on and transport the captain over to the Enterprise. And now the captain of the Klingon vessel is on the Enterprise where he can actually have a conversation with Captain Picard.
Yeah. By the way, the issue of the Federation not having cloaking is a season 6 or season 7 episodes.
Okay.
You find out that they actually could cloak all along. Federation ships can only cloak. Federation ships can become immaterial. But they don't do it because they signed a treaty with the Romulans and the Klingons.
Ro! Yeah. Ro, I'm Ro Rari!
And Terry O'Quinn's in that episode.
I'm Ro Rari.
Love him. The other thing I want to say that kind of makes me sad about this episode is that we don't get more of this Riker. And what happens is that Picard, you know, his character grows, continues to evolve, and Picard really displaces Riker among the Klingons. I mean, you get the sense like, oh, good, Riker now has some connection, a special connection to Klingons.
Right.
But for some reason, it's going to be Picard who becomes, he's going to become the arbiter of succession at some point. When they're having an issue with who's in charge of the Klingon Empire, he kind of takes the role away from Riker. I see why, because the way the characters evolve, it makes more sense for Picard to do it. I don't know. It made me sad because I like this Riker so much.
All of these characters have the capacity to evolve in 178 total hours of the show. I mean, we could see every primary character become stronger, and we just don't.
Riker's a little stuck, and we'll see it in Best of Both Worlds, too, and there's this whole conversation about why doesn't he want to be a captain on his own ship? Well, because if he's a captain on his own ship, then the dude's out of a job, right? I mean, he's not on the show anymore.
Right.
It kind of becomes like, how long can you be second in command without moving up on that ship? And that does seem a little, that I think that traps his character a lot.
And it's unfortunate when you think of 30 plus years later, when we have this whole new batch of Star Trek shows, which are really exciting to think about, that they're finally saying, hey, we've got this fan base, we could make these shows and probably make them cheaper than we ever could before. Why don't we just give them what they want, the fans? Like, let's make more Star Trek. Hey, you know, Discovery has this show. They create a cast of characters who people really love, and they say, and the fans have said, hey, we'd love to see a show like this. And so they're doing these, a number of spinoffs of that one new show. And you could, and you know, including Picard, it's not a spinoff, but another Trek show.
Morse Trek, yeah.
And even off of Picard, they're talking about doing a Seven of Nine spinoff of that show. And it's so great
as a
Trek fan to see this. We could have had it back then. It's too bad. You know, we could have had Riker on his own show.
It's just bullshit because where the fuck is our Crusher show? And I don't mean Wesley, I mean Beverly.
Right. Okay.
Where is our Beverly Crusher space doctor patrolling the galaxy, solving medical problems, kicking ass?
I would love
when she shot up that Admiral Quinn in Conspiracy, she should be there with her long dancer legs, kicking the crap out of people.
High kicking.
That should be her power. And damn
I agree.
I want it. Gates McFadden, you know, she still got it. She could do it. Gates, I hope you're listening to this.
Why can't we see a show like that with her now? And why can't we? Michael Dorn has been promoting this Worf show, this Worf standalone show, for years before Picard. And you know, why don't we see that? Like, why? There's enough of an audience to see these things. It doesn't sully the Picard name or any of these other shows to see spinoffs / reboots. And I understand, you know, they want to keep the property precious and they want to make sure they don't over dilute the, you know, media with this stuff, but come on, there's an audience for all this stuff. And I'll tell you what, I would watch all of these shows. And I wouldn't be like, eh, I can't watch the Worf show because I'm all Picarded out right now.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd watch all
because they could be different shows about different facets of the universe. It's a huge universe, and I'm telling you, they'll never put us in charge of Paramount,
especially after this podcast. Let me ask you this, Andrew: have we honored the shit out of this episode?
It's been a matter of honor, and I feel that I've honored the matter. I got to tell you, there is more shit I could say about this. I can go on about this show for quite a long time, this particular episode, but I'm going to quit because I don't think anyone else wants to hear it.
Episode 2.8.2, number one. Next time.
Oh, man.
I know. Oh, man is right. And it's a measure of a man. A measure of a man.
Arguably the best episode of season two. I'm going to put that out there.
Really?
But I would say that this is the best episode. I mean, this is what your Picard show is going to be based on right here.
Right,
Captain
right.
Bruce Maddox. He wants to disassemble Data.
Arguably, Raggy.
Fucking Bruce Maddox. I'm telling you, measure of a man.
Oh, my God.
Great.
All right. Hey, everybody, join us next episode for season two, episode 9, Measure of a Man.
Oh, jolly good bungo.
Don't forget to visit our website, sttngeez.com. There's a lot of good stuff there. There's links to videos. There's links to every one of these stinking episodes, which, by the way, everyone, they're free for your ears. All you have to do is put them on and listen to them. Free!
Free! Free's my favorite price.
I'm Commander Davey Dave signing out.
And I am Admiral Andrew. Goodbye.
Let's go mine the store, man.
Riv Rong Ren Rosper.
Thank the maker that Commander Riker is all right. I know you're leaning against your 24th century holographic fireplace, drinking a reconstituted martini from a 10-forward replicator card, wondering, they actually made me like Riker. What will they think of next?
Well, the guy's a good actor, and I honestly think Frakes brings a ton to this character.
How about questioning Data's humanity?
It's like, would you put your lawnmower in charge of the flagship of the Federation? No!
Is he man? Is he machine? Is he rhythm? Is he dancer?
You're not going to put him in charge of the damn Enterprise if he's a machine that has no sentience to him.
Hold on to something stationary. Wait, it's a courtroom episode. Everything is stationary.
Captain, I believe the paint is drying over here. Let's watch it together, Captain.
Did I mention it's a courtroom episode? In space?
Is that how you see us? Interesting.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, if there isn't anyone polite and civilized in the room, we're just a bunch of savages.
It's true. I feel like I need to journal about that.
Hear ye, hear ye. It's The Measure of a Man on the next episode of STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast.
Dear Karga,